As a reminder, if you have not done so already, check out the Tapping Success Academy. It still is really cool. It's been really cool the entire time it's existed, and it's still sitting there. If you got any questions about that, let me know about that. So today, we're going to talk about self-acceptance, self-love, or comfortable inside of my own skin. And the reason why I have it titled this particular way is, depending on how you define these three different things, they might be distinct in your mind. They might be the same inside of your mind. And so as we navigate our way through this, you might actually hear me interchangeably use these three things. And I'm basically talking about the exact same thing. And as we step into this and we kind of get a sense of what each of these pieces are, why that is actually the case. As always, these are my definitions. Use the definitions that make the most sense for you. But I always like defining things at the top so that when I am talking, you are aware of the things that I am talking about, and it makes it easier for you to understand where I am coming from. And then you can take or leave whatever parts of this that make sense for you. So my definition of being comfortable inside of my own skin, and actually I want to take a step back and give a little context to this. A number of years ago, my sister had called me because she was having difficulty at work. And she asked me, what do you do when you are in a situation where you're in a work setting and you don't feel comfortable or confident? And I thought about it for a moment and I replied, I don't know, because I have never been in a situation professionally where I didn't feel comfortable or confident. Now, my personal life is the exact opposite of it. And if you saw the email that I sent out promoting this particular month's class, you know, the reason I found my way to tapping was because in social and personal settings, I did not feel comfortable inside of my own skin. You know, the summer when I was 33 years old was really my rock bottom moment, that my social anxiety had grown to the point where I couldn't ask for help in stores. I couldn't answer my own phone. I lived in Baltimore at the time. And the way the parking structure at the airport worked was you got on the bus and then you just said, hey, stop for me. That, like, there wasn't a cord or a button to push, or there wasn't regular stops. And I couldn't even do that. Like, I was flying home from standing on stage in front of 8,000 people, and that was as easy as breathing. And just saying stop was something that did not feel safe and comfortable for me. And I would get off when someone else said stop, even if it was two levels away from where my car was, hauling all of my luggage and whatever around. And as time passed, what I came to realize is that wasn't that social interaction felt dangerous for me. It was entry. Because once I was in a conversation, it was fine. I could read body language. I could see what was going on. I could see how everything fit into. I was at that point in my life, I was always the first person to show up to any social gathering or party. Not because I was uncoolly punctual. I am uncool, but that was not the reason why I was showing up early. By being the first or second person into the room, then the community was slowly building itself as each person came in. And so emotionally, I knew where I fit in. Where if I was walking into a room full of people, for me, that felt really, really unsafe until I found my way into a conversation. And so for me, this idea of being comfortable inside of my own skin is knowing what you're capable of, knowing what you're not capable of, and being okay with that. And that's part of the reason why this particular definition of me talking about comfortable inside of my own skin, I relate back to that conversation I had with my sister. In a working setting, the reason why I've always felt comfortable inside of my own skin is because if you ask me to do something I'm not very capable at, I'm really self-aware of my skill set. And I'm able to go, yes, I will happily try that for you and recognize that I'm only this capable at the thing you're asking me to do. And so these are the reasonable outcomes. And if you're okay with that, I'm okay with that as well. And so there's no sense for me in a professional setting of my sense of value or worth tied up in what I am doing. I know what I can do. I know how I can do it. And previously in my personal life, that was not the case. That like the visceral image of it is I always felt like someone's kid brother who was tagging along, who didn't really belong, but everybody was tolerating. Like that is a way I could tell that particular story. And so as we do this work of self-acceptance and self-love, another way of thinking about it is how comfortable do I feel inside of my own skin in any particular setting? Because what that requires me to do is it requires me to accept me as I am, what I'm capable of and what I'm not capable of and what I'm learning and my good choices in the past and my bad choices in the past. And it's something that I'm slowly stepping my way into. So I'm recognizing what gives me worth and value and what doesn't. And so it's not what I do that gives me worth and value, but it's because of who I am. The other thing that's really important to recognize with this sense of self-acceptance and being comfortable inside of our own skin is how contextual this is. You know, so for example, I said, you know, for a long time in my life, and it's because of, you know, for the last 14 years, the amount of internal work that I've done and the over 500 first dates that I've gone on since I've moved to New York City, it's amazing how quickly you become comfortable inside of your own skin when you put in that many reps and survive. But it was contextual. I was okay in work. I was not okay in personal settings. It was contextual. I wasn't okay at entry, but once I was inside of the conversation, it was fine. It could be contextual. I'm comfortable talking about this topic in front of some people, and I'm not comfortable talking about the exact same topic in front of other people. And so it's important for us to recognize when we look at this sense of, I don't fit in and this doesn't feel safe and comfortable for me. Sometimes that can be just, I see myself in this particular way. Other times it's, I see myself in this particular way inside of a particular context. And it's important to recognize it's contextual because of the negativity bias that we have in our subconscious mind. And for those of you that are unfamiliar with the negativity bias that the subconscious mind has, is the subconscious mind is disposed to remember the things that go wrong, the negative things, so that we can learn from them. So I am just short of living in this particular apartment for 7 years. I live in a six-story walk-up here in New York, which means every single time I walk out the front door, I have to walk up 78 steps to get back to my front door, which means every single time I walk out the front door, I'm like packed for 3 days. I have two sets of shoes. I have workout clothing. I have a tie. I have water. I have cash. Like, because, you know, I don't want to be in a circumstance where I'm having to walk back up those steps. But today, this morning, which is my Saturday routine, there's this really amazing Colombian coffee shop in my neighborhood that they literally have two locations, one here and one in Bogota. 10 days after the beans are picked, they are actually served in a cup here. It's single sourced. It's an amazing place. It's a beautiful space. They have these amazing leek pastries. So every Saturday morning, that's where I go and I do my work. I have no recollection of walking up the stairs when I came home today. Because there was nothing special about walking up the stairs today. In the 7 years that I've lived in this building, on three occasions, I have tripped while walking up those stairs. I can tell you the exact location of all three of those trips. I can tell you about the mess the milk made when I dropped that gallon of milk as I tripped. I can tell you who was standing near me the times that I did, because I remember the things that go wrong. Even though multiple times a day I walk up and down those stairs, I don't remember most of them. And so we remember the things that go wrong to learn from them, which often means we learn the lessons that things are harder than they actually are. This is important when we're looking at the context of being comfortable inside of our own skin, where I might only in 10% of my life feel really unworthy, but I don't remember all of the places that I feel comfortable and worthy. So it's really easy to go, oh my gosh, I have this really big problem with self-acceptance and love, which I might, but it's in a much narrower span than is actually there. So it's just good for us to recognize as we're teasing these things apart. And when we get into today's process, which is one of the most question-heavy processes that I've created for you all, it's the opportunity to get us to look at all of these different aspects of recognizing being comfortable in our own skin and what is the context that is making us feel unworthy or unsafe. Okay. So for me, there's often time an arc that we go through as we become comfortable inside of our own skin and feel worthy in a particular place. Initially, when we do something new, it's exciting and we don't know enough to be worried. Like, it's just, oh, this is this really new cool thing. And if I don't have any experience with it, yes, I'm just going to dive headlong into it. Then, as we get a little experience, we realize the things that could possibly go wrong. You know, the number of times in my life where I have done things after the fact where I'm like, wow, that could have been really, really dangerous. And I mean physical peril, as I've navigated different parts of the world and I've gone hiking and I've gotten on the backs of all sorts of motor vehicles in different places where in hindsight, it's like, that was really, really dumb. But stepping into it, I didn't know enough to be afraid. I didn't understand the context. Then as we do something, and that could be, you know, giving a presentation, doing something at work, as we start to do it more, we start to recognize the things that could go wrong, which make us feel less comfortable, less competent, and oftentimes not worthy because it's like, oh my gosh, I'm in the wrong place. And so you can see how when I feel uncomfortable, it's really easy for me to write the story that I'm not worthy or capable in this particular scenario. The next step is, the more experience we have, some of it becomes easy and some of it becomes way harder. Again, because of the more experience that we have, the more context we have to that particular thing. And the last step is we become comfortable because we understand the stakes and we understand what we are capable of. You know, and I, again, like I keep going back to this, you know, for me, this huge, because when the reason why I bring up online dating is when I first decided to work on my sense of my social anxiety and not feeling comfortable, I decided to do the most dangerous thing I could think of emotionally, which was online dating. And I would literally set up dates where I lived in Baltimore, Maryland, that were a 25-minute walk from my apartment and would just tap my way all the way there and made it safer and safer. And so now when I'm in a scenario where I'm meeting someone new, even with the stakes of a date, which is all about being accepted on some level because we're looking for something that is bigger than just someone to hang out with, I'm more comfortable with who I am because I know who I am and I know my foibles and I know the things I do well and I know the things that I'm learning. And so as we step into this, that becomes the process. Now, there are a couple of things in addition to our human nature and our negativity bias that can get in the way with us being gentle with ourselves and with us accepting ourselves. The first is that sense of being gentle. It feels like we're letting ourselves off the hook. Of all of the phrases that I tap with my clients, the phrase being easy and gentle with myself is the phrase that has the single most amount of resistance from my clients. I even have clients that just roll their eyes at me like, oh God, I got to say this particular thing again. Because it is easy for us to believe that when we are being easy with and gentle with ourselves, that we're letting ourselves off the hook. I'm no longer taking responsibility for what I have done. It is okay for me to stop trying because I'm being gentle with myself. It can feel like we're lowering our standards. I'm being easy with myself, therefore I don't have to meet the exact same standard. It feels like it's demotivating. If we put ourselves in this position where, oh, I can just be easy with myself, then I don't actually have to try. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. Every single year, at the beginning of the year, I choose work, like internal work that is going to be for me for that calendar year. In 2020, my work was to be easy and gentle with myself. When it came to personal development, that was the only thing I was worried about for the entire calendar year. And every single day I did personal tapping, I spent some time on it and I kept evaluating it because I recognize what being easy and gentle with myself is it means I'm recognizing the context of the choices that I'm making. And the context of the choices I'm making is not just like who I'm making that choice in front of, but also what was my resource state when I was making that particular choice? You know, there is a reason a couple of years ago that they added the word hangry to the dictionary. is because our resource state impacts the way that we do things. I dated a woman a number of years ago that she always had snacks on her because she knew if she got hungry, she turned into a grumpopotamus and she didn't want to have anybody have to experience that and she didn't enjoy that. So there was always your granola bar or almonds or whatever. And she even explicitly told me, if we're going out the door to do something for a number of hours, remind me to pack food. So she even gave me permission to say, I know you are not nagging me when you encourage me to do this particular thing, because this is going to help me to navigate what is going on. A number of years ago for Lent, I decided to do the old school, like 12th century, Eastern Rite version, not the Roman Rite, the Eastern Rite version of Lent, which actually starts on Monday, not on Ash Wednesday, because they count their 40 days a little differently than the Roman Catholic Church does. And over the course of 40 days, you have 43 meals. Like, that's how extreme of a fast it is. And the first meal is dinner on Wednesday. So you start fasting at sundown when you go to bed Sunday night. Your first meal is Wednesday at dinner. And so Wednesday afternoon, I am talking to one of my clients and she goes, are you angry at me? I'm like, why? Because you sound so mad. I'm like, okay, sorry. I haven't eaten in 72 hours. I need to think about how I approach my clients as I am doing the spiritual practice because this is impacting my life. But being gentle is about that. It's about recognizing what is going on in my entire life when I'm making these choices. Now, again, it's not giving myself a pass. It doesn't mean that I'm not taking responsibility, but instead I am positioning myself in a place where I'm recognizing why I'm making the choices that I'm making, because it's easier for me to accept myself when I'm not constantly beating myself up for the past. Last weekend, it's all a blur. I think it was last weekend. There was something called the Spring Energy Event. And the presentation I gave was on shame, guilt, and regret. Shame is I am bad. Guilt is I've done bad. Regret is I recognize the choice I've made. I'm taking responsibility for that particular choice. I'm learning from that particular choice. And so this idea of being gentle with myself is helping me to escape shame and guilt, because it's really hard to love myself when I am stuck in shame or guilt. I've done bad or I am bad makes it hard to engage with that. Now, in the process that I'm going to teach you, permission is going to become really useful. Now, for most of the folks who are on the call today, this is our most international collection of folks. This is a picture from the television program Welcome Back, Kotter. The gentleman in the center in the bottom is Gabe Kaplan. Gabe Kaplan is from Brooklyn. And in the show, he plays a guy who moves back to Brooklyn and teaches at his high school. And the four gentlemen around him are four of the students. It's kind of a remedial class. These are the Sweat Hogs, which was the gang. You will notice in the lower left-hand corner are a very, very, very young John Travolta. Immediately above the teacher is a character by the name of Horseshack. In the lower right-hand corner is Boom Boom Washington. But the reason why I have this particular picture here is our friend in the upper right-hand corner. That character was a character by the name of Juan Epstein. And whenever Juan had done something wrong or Juan needed to get out of something, he came with a note from home. But all of the notes were forged. And they were clearly forged because they were always signed Juan Epstein's mother. Not her name, but literally Juan Epstein's mother. And I love the idea of permission. You know, when you are 13 years old and you're wandering the hallways during class and an adult sees you, the first thing they ask you is, where are you supposed to be? Because it's class time and you're not supposed to be in the hallway. And what you do is you reach into your pocket and you pull out a hall pass or a permission slip that's saying, I am allowed to be here. And at 13, when you have a permission slip in your pocket, you feel like you can do anything because you kind of are given permission to do things that are otherwise not allowed to do. The process that we're going to do today Every single one of the tapping phrases starts with, I give myself permission. And the reason why I love the phrase, I give myself permission, is it is a gentler way to step into the work that we're going to be doing. It's not a command that I have to love myself. It's not a command that I need to accept myself. It's saying, I give you permission if you choose to do it. And so instead of forcing something onto ourselves, we're opening the capacity to allow ourselves to do it. And it also kind of feels like an implicit command. I give myself permission to love myself, which my subconscious mind goes, okay, I'm going to love myself now, or I'm open to that particular thing. And so it makes it easier and gentler for us to step into that particular disposition. And if any of you have tapped with me in any of these classes, or you've tapped with me as a client, you will hear me use that phrase over and over again. I give myself permission. I give myself permission. And this is the reason why, is we're creating a context and a space that makes it easier for to us accept what is going on. So before we jump into the process today and I start giving you kind of step by step and how we're going to step into this, questions about any of the stuff that we have talked about so far, feel free to drop something into the chat box. Go right ahead. Yes, grumpopotamus is one of my favorite words ever. I use it all of the time. Also, we're a small enough group. If you just want to unmute yourself, go right ahead. I'll call on you if I see a couple of people, unmute yourself. But feel free, if you have a question, unmute yourself, a comment, a thought, or you can type something if you don't feel comfortable unmuting yourself at this time. Lisa.
Oh, I love that. I give myself permission because a lot of times most of us have some sort of inner rebel in us that fights any kind of authority, even our own selves giving ourselves, you know, that's why we struggle with dieting and stuff like that, because we're restricting something and we're forcing ourselves to do something. And so we rebel against it. And by giving yourself permission, you take out that rebel inside you fighting against loving yourself, doing something, you know, eating food that is more healthy, whatever it is that you're telling yourself to do. And so I think it's super powerful. And I use a lot, I'm open to the blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm open to.
Absolutely. I'm open to the possibility is another way of doing the exact same thing. 100%.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think that I think you point out really clearly that's good for us to recognize is sometimes we can be given really good advice from someone we don't like, or someone who is constantly a burden in our life. And if there is someone in our life who is always telling us, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this, and we're pushing against that because they don't have our best interest in mind, if they tell us to do something good, you know, a stop clock is right twice a day, there's a part of us that is pushing back against that particular thing. And so in addition to that inner rebel, if we find ourselves in a circumstance where someone is telling us something that is good for us, but we don't like listening to that particular person, I like saying, I give myself permission to do this because I am choosing to do this, not because this other person said it's okay. And I am doing this not because they're saying it and they don't get to take credit for it, because I'm giving myself permission to do this because this is the right choice for me. And so if you recognize yourself in a circumstance where there's something you want to do and someone you're tired of listening to is telling you to do that particular thing, that's another really powerful reframe as we step into that particular piece of it. Awesome. Other thoughts or questions about just kind of the framework before we step into the process? Obviously, you get a chance to ask about anything as we go through it.
Jean, could you talk a little bit more or restate, repeat what you said along the lines of being gentle with self helps you avoid shame, the I'm bad or the guilt I've done bad. I think that is such a core thing.
Yeah.
I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah. And so again, for me, in that particular case, what I'm doing is I am providing context to what has happened in the past. You know, because, and this is the really, really difficult thing. And this is, and I'm sure I've used this particular analogy in the class before, but I think it's such a powerful way of recognizing like how hard it is for us to remember what it was like. I can remember learning how to drive. I can remember being in the minivan with my mother. I can be in the Subaru hatchback with my father. I had to learn on a standard transmission. Like, that was a difficult thing to do. I remember those moments. I don't remember not knowing how to drive. That if you put me in my 13-year-old body and I think of myself at 13, I cannot recreate the terror of being behind the wheel of a car driving, because I can't unremember knowing how to do that particular task. And so oftentimes when we are beating ourselves up for things that have happened in the past, where we're defining ourselves as shame, I am bad, or guilt, I did bad, we're judging ourselves through the lens and the eyes of what we know now. And so being gentle with myself about the past choices is providing context. I can see in hindsight, because I did X, it produced Y. But when I was making that choice, I didn't know that was a possibility. If I knew it was a possibility, I would have done it differently. You know, one of the things that I don't understand, and this is me dispositionally, I'm not judging people who say this and believe this, but it's not something that resonates with me. I do not resonate with people saying, you know, I have absolutely no regrets about my past choices. My past choices have made me who I am. I've made past choices that have hurt people. And if I could take back those past choices and even be less evolved in taking back those past choices and being a different person, I'd do that, because I don't like the fact that deliberately or through not being aware or not having the possibility of knowing the choices that I've made that have hurt other people. But the sense of being gentle with myself is looking back at them and going, this is the context. This is what you knew. This is what you were feeling emotionally. This is what you've now learned. This is the responsibility you've taken. This is how you've made amends. Whatever that stuff looks like, I'm bringing context to those past choices. So I'm not beating myself up now in the moment going, I am a horrible person. I did a horrible thing, and that defines me. There's a difference between me saying, I did a horrible thing and I'm taking responsibility for it, and I did a horrible thing and that defines me. And so oftentimes this idea of love and acceptance is speaking the truth about the past. And part of speaking truth about the past is taking responsibility, but it also means giving my choices and the moments context. And that's speaking the truth as well. And we are so good at doing this for the people in our lives. When someone makes a really bad choice, to go, yes, but you didn't know. Yes, but your intention was. Yes, and you've taken responsibility for this. We're so good at being cheerleaders for other people to help them to recognize that about themselves. And we are the worst person in the world. One of the people who is on the call right now often jokes about the fact that she feels like Attila the Hun. And she's not, right? You're not. But it's really easy to see ourselves in that way because we want to be so responsible for what's going on. And being over-responsible is, for me, as problematic as being under-responsible in the choices that I am making. And so by providing context and being gentle with where I was inside of that, it makes it easier for me to regret the past, but not be defined by the past. To see that I am not that thing, which makes it easier for me to love and accept myself. Because it's really difficult to be in a state of shame or guilt and acceptance at the exact same time. Like, those are things that are countering against each other. And so by stepping out of those other emotions makes it easier for us to step into this place. Because if I'm bad or I've done bad, the other thing I then do is I undermine myself in this moment. And I now, not only am I living in the past, I'm also cutting myself off from opportunities because I'm not capable of being in that space. I'm not allowed to be in that space. I'm not worthy to be in that space. It's good for others. It's not good for me. Does that work for you? Great. Awesome. Other thoughts or questions about that, or things that have come up through that particular conversation? Okay. As questions and those things come back up again, that's great. Let's see here. I want you as that button. And I'm going to go back to speaker view. As a side note, I on the 23rd, whatever the, I'll send you guys the details on this, but the third Saturday at this exact time of May, I'm actually teaching a class on how I do all of the technology for the classes that I teach. So if you're interested in kind of understanding all the bits and bobs of how I structure all of this stuff, I'll be sending you guys a note about it later, but I'm going to be spending a couple hours. I'm going to give you slide decks, all of my stuff. And yeah, so that is coming.
Saturday or Sunday, Gene?
It's Sunday. It will be the exact same time. So it's basically the third Sunday of May. We'll be back to the second Sunday for this next week, next month. And then it'll be, yeah, so 4 weeks from now, 23rd, 25th, whatever that Sunday is. And like I said, I will send you guys full details so you can sign up for that particular thing as well. Awesome. Okay, here is the process. As always, when we do this particular process, we're just going to be tapping the whole time. You know, if you are uncomfortable asking questions and having people tap along with you, I typically just have them tap on the collarbone or tap on the side of the hand while we're going back and navigating all of this. As a reminder, the reason why that we're doing this is, it is, I find it, and it's a mistake I make as well. I say, tell me about what is going on. And I ask you a bunch of questions. I'm like, great, now let's start tapping on it. Well, we're tuning in while we're asking those questions. So I am a big fan of us tapping the entire time that we are doing that. So step one, imagine a setting where you feel uncomfortable. That could be professional, that could be personal, but I want you to find a context that you feel uncomfortable. We're going to tune into that sensation. Again, where it shows up in the body. And then what we're going to do, like always, is we're going to start asking the sensation questions. As always, in just a moment, I'm going to give you a PDF that has all of these questions on it. You're going to get the video afterwards so you can see it. But I'm going to go through them quickly as we talk about them. But know that you're getting this very soon. So we ask the sensation questions. Now we're going to start with the questions that we always start with. Number one, what will go wrong if I do this thing? Again, we're asking the sensation. We're not trying to intellectually figure it out. But we got a bunch more questions this time. Who is going to judge me if I do this? And again, we're trying to understand context. Now, that could be internal judgment. It could be external judgment. It could be both. What is the biggest mistake I could make while doing this? Again, we're trying to get some context to what is going on. So as I'm, because oftentimes I'm giving a presentation, I am going on a date, I am showing up to a party, I am whatever it is, you know, I'm looking at myself in the mirror, whatever place we feel uncomfortable. Now, with these questions, there isn't necessarily going to be an answer for all of them. But again, we're just trying to surface information. If I am working with a client, I love giving them extra time to be able to respond to this. And I will oftentimes say, and if there isn't an answer to that question, it's okay. Like, I just make it comfortable because I don't want them to feel like they need to perform for me, because clients regularly feel like they need to perform for us. We want them to give the answer that is true, not the answer that they think is going to make us happy, because that's not why we're doing this. Who is going to judge me if I make a mistake? Now, that's a very similar question to question B, but it is also a different question. Who is going to judge me if I do this, and who is going to judge me if I make a mistake? It is possible that there isn't an answer for B and there is for D, or vice versa. The same person could be your D, or it could actually be different people. If I do this, one person is going to judge me. If I do it wrong, a different person is going to judge me. And this is a good reason why, when we're asking these questions, particularly if we're doing this on our own, taking notes is such a valuable thing, because you can see all of the stories and the phrases and the information that we're gathering from this, that we could use lots of other techniques that we're not going to cover today, but just in your tapping tool set, things that you can reach for. What proof do I have that this is going to go wrong? That's the question we always ask when we're tuning into something like that. Again, we might find a piece of history. We might find a family story. Great way to start unpacking the information from the past. Who says I can't be successful at this? Sometimes the stories that other people tell us about us define whether or not we are capable and acceptable in a particular scenario. Who will be disappointed with me if I do this and am successful? You know, that sneaky fear of success thing that is hiding inside of there. Who will be disappointed in me if I do this and fail? And as we know, it is possible for us to have the same person judge us in both ways. And we can be judging ourselves in both ways. You know, I was helping a person with podcasts and she said, what happens if no one listens? What happens if people listen? Like she literally said both of those things that fast. And so she was afraid of both outcomes. And so we could be disappointed in ourselves and not being successful and being successful, or others could as well. What is the worst possible outcome? You know, I love just tuning in and bringing that stuff forward. Now, doing all of this is a really good way for us to surface information and tune into lots of stuff. The process that I'm teaching you today, we're just tapping and surfacing information, and we're not going to go after the specific details that came up. But if you are tapping on your own, and if you are tapping with someone else, all of the information that comes forward from this is a great thing for you to tune into and see as a possibility of something that you might want to tap on. But for the process today, what we're going to do then instead is we're just going to tap on a series of permission phrases. I give myself permission to know my worth isn't defined by others. To know my worth isn't defined by my actions. To know, and obviously we're saying I give myself permission, but for brevity, I'm not saying that every time. Give myself to know my worth isn't defined by the outcome. To know my worth isn't defined by others' reactions to the outcome. To know that it's okay to not be perfect at this. To learn from each experience. To know that it's okay that I am learning. To know that it is safe for me to try things I am not good at or good enough at. To be gentle with myself. To grow in being more capable. To hold myself to a standard based on what I am capable of. To learn from taking imperfect action. To be gentle with myself for not being gentle with myself. Now, and this is something that came up on Tuesday when we were talking about this. You could only do this step of the process, and oh my gosh, how powerful and healing would that be? Just to take M, what is M? M, what, the 16th letter, 15th letter of the alphabet? Just taking this group of phrases and just tapping on them. The other thing that I will do, and I'll do this in the demonstration, is I might take some of these phrases and I might do the same phrase a couple of times. You know, just based on what I have heard in the questions before, trusting my instinct in the moment, I might, you know, do, I give myself permission to know it's safe for me to try things I'm not good at. I give myself permission to be gentle with myself. I give myself permission to be gentle with myself. I give myself permission to be gentle with myself. I give myself permission to grow in being more capable. So we can do them one at a time, or as we're doing it, we might find a place that we land on it, or another application of it is go through the list and then go through the list. The other thing is, obviously, you don't have to do them all, that there is an option, but that's just kind of the gentle way that we step into that particular thing. So before I do a demonstration, and again, I'm going to give you access to the PDF here in just a moment, questions about the process itself and what I just shared, or anything that we have covered so far that has come up in talking about and sharing that particular process with you. Okay, so who would like to give this particular thing a go today? Oh, hi, Donna. Are you asking a question or are you volunteering? Either is great. Feel free to unmute yourself.
I was volunteering.
Awesome. Great. Let's do it. Okay, so what I want you to do is just take a nice big deep breath for me, and everybody else, we can just kind of tap along with her. And if you want to move from point to point as we do this, feel comfortable to do that. I will probably instruct her where we're going to be jumping around all over the place. If that is something that does not work for you, just tap on the side of the hand, tap on the collarbone. Donna, the exact same thing as he give you instruction. If it doesn't make sense to be tapping on that point, do the thing that makes the most sense for you. So I want you to just tune into that a scenario where you feel uncomfortable inside of your own skin. And as you tune into that, what's the sensation that you notice? Is there a tightness somewhere? Is there a heaviness? Does it feel like a wall? Is there a chattery brain? It could be a sensation that's outside of you, like a wall or something pulling you back or pulling you down. As you just imagine that space, what do you notice?
It really is the sensation of not being comfortable in my skin. Like
there's
pressure inside of me somehow.
Yeah. Great. Awesome. So as we move forward, and I'm going to be asking you some questions here. I just want you to tune into that sensation, and I don't want you to intellectually figure this out, but I actually want you to ask that pressure-y sensation you feel in your body. Okay. And as you tap on your chin, what could go wrong when doing this? And feel free to share as much or as little out loud in this particular setting that you feel comfortable with. We know the tapping, as long as you're tuning in, it's useful. But if there's any information that would be useful for us to have context, feel free to share.
What could go wrong?
Yeah.
Is that I just never really get the job, that I never get good at the job that I took.
Yeah. And as you tap on the side of the eye, who would judge you if you were trying to get it right and you were doing this? And it could be internal, it could be external, it could be both, it could be lots of people, and it could be no one.
It's kind of a group of women who've been very successful in my life.
Yeah. Tippy top of the head, what's the biggest mistake you could make while trying to do this?
Hold back. Just not give it my all. Get scared.
Back. Yeah, great. As you tap on the collarbone again, who would judge you if you made that mistake or made another mistake?
So someone recommended me for this job.
Yeah.
And he would judge me.
Yeah. Under the arm. What proof do you have that it could go wrong? Or that it is going wrong?
I have held back in the past, not given my all.
Yeah. Yeah, and as you tap on the side of the hand, who says you can't be successful at this? Does anybody say that?
No. Yeah, they might not. Just me.
Just you? Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Tap on the chin. Is there anyone, and who would it be, that would be disappointed if you were successful at this?
I don't think so.
Okay. As you tap on the eyebrow, who would be disappointed in you if you made mistakes and failed?
Everyone. Is what came up immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that and the thing is, like, intellectually we know that's probably not true, but emotionally that feels true, and so that's the right answer. Mm-hmm. Side of the eye, what's the worst possible outcome?
That I get fired.
Yeah. That would be a bad outcome.
And that I don't get another job. That's
right.
It. Like, not just I get fired, but my career is over.
Yeah. Tippy top of the head and just move from point to point. I give myself permission to know my worth isn't defined by others.
I give myself permission to know that my worth isn't defined by others.
I give my eyebrow. I give myself permission to know that my worth isn't defined by my actions.
I give myself permission to know that my worth isn't defined by my actions.
And just move from point to point. And I won't say the points as we go forward. Just tap where it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I give myself permission to know my worth isn't defined by my actions.
I give myself permission to know that my worth isn't defined by my actions.
I give myself permission to know my worth isn't defined by the outcome.
I give myself permission to know that my worth isn't defined by the outcome.
I give myself permission to know my worth isn't defined by others' reaction to the outcome.
I give myself permission to know that my worth isn't defined by others' reaction to the outcome.
I give myself permission to know my worth isn't defined by others' reaction to the outcome.
I give myself permission to know that my worth isn't defined by others' reaction to the outcome.
I give myself permission to know it's okay not to be perfect at this.
I give myself permission to know that it's okay not to be perfect at this.
I give myself permission to know it's okay not to be perfect at this.
I give myself permission to know it's okay not to be perfect at this.
I give myself permission to learn from each experience.
I give myself permission to learn from each experience.
I give myself permission to know it's okay that I am learning.
I give myself permission to know it's okay that I am learning.
I give myself permission to know it's okay that I am learning.
I give myself permission to know that it's okay that I am learning.
I give myself permission to know it's safe for me to try things I'm not good at.
I give myself permission to know it's safe for me to try things I'm not good at.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to grow into being more capable.
I give myself permission to grow into being more capable.
I give myself permission to grow into being more capable.
I give myself permission to grow into being more capable.
I give myself permission to hold myself to a standard based on what I am capable of.
I give myself permission to hold myself to a standard based on what I am capable of.
I give myself permission to learn while taking imperfect action.
I give myself permission to learn while taking imperfect action.
I give myself permission to learn while taking imperfect action.
I give myself permission to learn while taking imperfect action.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself for not being gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself for not being gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be easy and gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be easy and gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself for not being gentle with myself.
I give myself permission to be gentle with myself for not being gentle with myself.
Nice big deep breath. Give me a big stretch. If you got some water nearby, feel free to take a sip or a gallon or a gulp or whatever is necessary. So what do you notice as we poke our way through that?
That the all of this permission is very freeing.
Mm-hmm.
And easing, kind of the easing of that pressure inside and a welling up so that I could feel my throat getting tight.
Yeah. Yeah. And just out of curiosity, as you tune into that tightness in the throat, what's the tightness in the throat now worried about?
It's more just sadness.
Mm.
That I'm so hard and so often don't give myself permission to be imperfect.
Yeah. Let's just, it's not part of the protocol, but let's just do a little tapping on that sadness. Tippy top of the head and just move from point to point. I recognize the fact. The sadness that I'm feeling. Is just me mourning. Lost opportunities. And lost time. In all of those spaces that I've been hard on myself. And being hard on myself.
Is
a part of me that's trying to have me raise my standard.
is a part of me that's trying to have me raise my standard.
But really, it's just beating me up. And giving myself permission. To be gentler with myself. Recognizes it is possible for me. To take responsibility for where I am. But to grow into something I want to be. And so the sadness that I'm feeling. Is just sad about all that time I spent. Beating myself up. And so I give myself permission. To just feel that sadness. And to mourn the loss of that time. Knowing it is possible for me. Not to stay stuck in that place. Nice deep breath. And so what do you notice with that?
Yeah, thank you. More release, kind of release around the heart.
Yeah. And for everyone, I think it's really important that we recognize that oftentimes when we're doing transformation and we recognize what is now possible for us, the sense of sadness that she's feeling is something I experience so much with my clients. Because when we start to give ourselves permission to step into what we are capable of and what we are worthy of, we're like, oh, crap. I can't believe I waited this long to give myself permission to do this. I've wasted so much time and energy being stuck in that place. And so paying attention to that particular sadness and just being aware that clients will be experiencing that when it comes up, it's useful for us to normalize it and go, you know, it makes so much sense. Like, because this is what you're doing. This is what sadness is saying. You know, you hear me talk about this all the time. The emotions are information and sadness is just mourning the loss of something. And in this, it's mourning time that we weren't being kind and gentle to ourselves and being able to put ourselves out there more. And so the fact that sadness comes up immediately after transformation is something that happens regularly, not always, not even more than half the time, but it's far from an anomaly. And so just know that that's going to happen when we're doing work on our own and know that that's going to happen when we're working with clients. So questions from the rest of you all, for myself, for Donna, about the experience, like, you know, what else is bubbling around in your head as we think about this? Lisa, yeah, go ahead.
So I have a question that's more in general about tapping, not so much this, but just wondering, so when we yawn, when we tap, is that kind of a delayed reaction? Or if like I have somebody tapping on a phrase and they yawn, would it be beneficial for them to repeat that phrase to kind of get like deeper, deeper underneath that?
Yeah. So basically what's happening is we are leaving, and I always get these backwards because I'm dyslexic, but we're either leaving the sympathetic going into the parasympathetic, or we're leaving the parasympathetic and we're going into the sympathetic. Basically what happens is, without using big fancy words, and I'm sure someone who knows what I'm talking about, type the right version into the chat box and I'll look it up later. But basically what happens is that when we are in fight, flight, freeze, fog, any of those things, the body stops doing anything that is related to growth, renew, any of that sort of stuff. It's the reason why when you step in front of to take a test or step in front of a presentation, your mind goes blank. It's because your capillaries squeeze shut and they push all of the oxygen from your leg, from your brain to your legs so that you can run away. And so what happens is when we go from aerobic respiration to anaerobic respiration. So I'm not using oxygen, I'm using biochemicals to run away. That's where the energy is coming from. That's the reason why you're sore after a new workout, is because we're not using, like, that stuff gets caught in the muscles. So when we downregulate the muscles, we return back to growth, restore, respond. So that means all of that energy and attention is going back to our lungs and it's going back to our digestive system. That's the reason why we burp a lot when we're tapping. That's the reason why we fart a lot when we're tapping. That's the reason why we yawn, is because the system is going, oxygen. I'm leaving anaerobic respiration. I'm returning to aerobic respiration. And so the yawn is simply the downregulation. the downregulation of the emotion when we're doing that particular thing. So for me, what I do when someone yawns is I just affirm it. Ooh, like that yawn. Good stuff. And so I'm giving them permission. So I'm training the body. Oh, relax. Leave that state and go to this state. And so the yawn, the burp, the gurgle, the fart, the whatever it is happening as the body is downregulating. And so we might go back and hit that thing again to see if there's like tail enders that are attached to that particular thing. And we might not. So it's feedback that process is happening. Now, it's really important to recognize if you are not yawning, it does not mean transformation is not happening. Like, it is possible for us to have downregulation of emotion without having that come up, without the burps, the farts, the gurgles, the whatever it is. But if it does happen, that's the consequence of it. So just know that it's a good sign because we're releasing, we're releasing, we're releasing. And you'll notice as we're talking, like, your system is still continuing from the tapping we just did, processing whatever you were doing. And it's like, oh, more oxygen. A couple of minutes pass. Oh, more oxygen. When I tap in the morning without, where I'm just tapping without words, a lot of mornings, somewhere between minute like 5 and minute 7, it just turns into like ugly, ugly yawn. And it's for like 2 or 3 straight minutes as I'm tapping, where it's just like, and the tears are flowing and all of that is happening. I even had a client one time, we were working on something that she had this huge discharge of wax from the body of just like releasing what was going on. And so just recognize it is a symptom that release is happening. It's not necessarily a flag to, ooh, that was the right thing. Because there can be delayed relaxation to that thing. Like, as the system is regulating and regulating, it's like, oh, okay, great. Okay. I need oxygen now. I'm no longer running on this biochemical.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You bet. And to date, and every single year, even though the article is now 12 and a half years old, the most read piece of content on my website is, why do I yawn when I am tapping? Because it just seems so out of place as we're doing that stuff. Other questions about tapping in general or the process that we just went through?
Can I ask a question about the process?
Of course. Go right ahead.
On one of the points, it just struck me as you were doing the demo, I give myself permission to grow into being more capable.
Yeah.
I've always sort of taken the impression now, read lots of things, that to grow into being more capable, yes, but one can see it, one has to do this self-improvement. Mm-hmm. And what just struck me as you were saying it, I would give myself to permission to be capable enough. Now, mm-hmm. would you, I'm just wondering what your thoughts on that were.
Absolutely. So, you know, like, so right now, in my business, over the course of the last 9 months, there's been a lot of transition in the way I'm doing business, the things I'm offering, like classes like this, because I am going through an evolutionary process internally. So much so, like, I spent most of February very, very frustrated, and I actually had a client of mine, we were just talking about life, and she's like, I know why that is, you'll figure it out. And I'm like, no, tell me. She goes, well, you're outgrowing a bunch of your clients, and that's okay. But for the 4 years prior to that, my business looked exactly the same. My business goals were exactly the same. I wasn't trying to grow my audience. I wasn't trying to do things that were new. And simply maintaining where I was inside of the capability, inside of my job, my business, my whatever, there was no desire to change because the level of capacity and capability I have was something I was 100% satisfied with. And it wasn't, I'm saying I'm satisfied so I don't have to push myself and I really have a different desire. Like, I truly was satisfied in that particular thing. And for me, just because of who I am, I always have a growth edge going on in my life. And the growth edge that was going on in my life was in my interpersonal relationships. It wasn't happening inside of my work. There are very few points in my life where I'm just like, and there's no internal desire to grow inside of that. But 100%, like, we're not trying to be peak efficient, capable at anything or everything. We're trying to have a really human experience. And there are certain things that I feel capable and confident inside of that helps me to engage with the human experience in a different way, but it is not a requirement. You know, I like in some ways, at least where I sit, the sense of American exceptionalism can create lots of problems because we're only sad, like no one wants to be average. And the problem is that most of us are, you know, like that is the definition of average, and that's okay. And so, again, it's this idea of being comfortable where we are, and sometimes being comfortable inside of my own skin with something is not moving forward in any way at all. Like I am so comfortable with my cooking skills. Like I get a meal delivery service where they send me the right ingredients. I follow the little bitty instructions and I'm okay. And I don't care if I have to follow a recipe every single time. And if I never get better than that, that's okay for me. And so as you navigate this, we get to choose the places that we feel like there's a growth edge, and we get to choose the places where I give myself permission to be exactly where I am right now, and that's totally awesome and perfect. And that might be for the next 6 minutes, and that might be for the rest of my life. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you. I mean, coincidentally, just an hour or so ago, I was on a trauma webinar with Janina Fisher, and she it's a Goethe quote, and she said, "If I accept you as you are," this is for clients. And she said the mental health system doesn't necessarily agree. But yeah, the quote is, if I accept you as you are, I will make you worse. If I treat you as though you are what you are capable of becoming, I help you become that.
Mm. And at the exact same, and I think that is absolutely true. Like holding space for what is capable is really, really important. And for me, at the exact same time, I always go back to the Milton Erickson quote, all transformation starts by stating with what is.
Yeah.
And so I might not define you by where you are, but give you permission and see you as what is capable. And at the exact same time, we have to be honest about where we are standing at this particular moment. Because if we're not honest about where we're standing at this particular moment, it's difficult for us to build on top of that. And that's a tension, because I don't want to define you by your symptom, by your trauma, by your experience. Like that is for me, and this is the way I like to think about it, is the things that have happened to me in the past are defining the place that I'm standing. They are not defining me. Mm-hmm. And they're not predetermining what comes next, but they impact what comes next. Like because I am in New York, I can't have coffee this afternoon in Paris. Like that is not something that is possible for me to do. Even if I jumped on a plane, I wouldn't get to coffee in time for it to be the afternoon today in Paris, just because of how far I would have to go. But I'm not defined by the fact that I am here in New York. It's just the place that I'm standing as I begin the thing I do next. Mm-hmm. And so holding that tension is important for us to recognize both of those pieces, at least dispositionally for me.
Thank you.
Yep. Awesome. Other questions, thoughts, reflections on the process itself?
Can you say
something? Michelle.
Thank you. Can you say something about where it goes, even if we're not going to do it during the session, like how you see it transitioning into the next step for a personal application of this?
Absolutely. Okay. So short term, like the first application of it is you could do the process as is. And in just a moment, we're going to break you into small groups. So you can do the process as is. And so there is value to that particular thing. The other way to take it to the next step, all of those questions that we asked at the beginning about who is going to judge you or what proof do I have that this is going to go wrong? The answers to those questions can then be things that we follow up on. You know, if the proof that I have is you tell me a story from the past, great. That gives us the opportunity, if we want to, we can go do the movie technique on that particular thing. If you tell me that, you know, my coworkers are going to judge me, awesome. What proof do you have that your coworkers are going to judge you? Why do you think they're going to judge you? And so then what I do is, just as a practitioner, I take the answer from the question that's part of the process, and then just use my regular practitioner skills and just start unpacking the information that they're giving me. And what we very easily could have done after asking those questions, instead of using the formula as it is presented here, is you could just take the information from that third step and tap on all of those particular things and not do any of the permission statements in the fourth step. And so that just becomes, and so the questions in step three are designed as a framework to explicitly do the ask the questions that implicitly we know are useful. You know, I was reading off of the sheet because I just wanted to replicate what the experience is going to be for you. Internally, I know all of these things, and I probably don't ask them in this particular order. And the permission statements, I probably don't tap on them in that particular order, where once you integrate and understand the value of the questions, you're then going to, if you want, turn them into your own words, do them in the order that you want, add the questions you want to them. This just becomes a framework for you. And so you could be in a circumstance where you're working directly off the worksheet with yourself or someone else, or you understand and integrate the framework and then do it in your own words as you engage it. So, yeah. So this is two things. One, this is a starting point. And two, this is an armful of Legos that I'm handing to you that you can then structure and put together in a way that is useful for you, that you then also get to add to all of the other Legos in your tool set that you already have to build a process that makes sense for you and to build a process that makes sense for the person who is in front of you. You know, like you saw, like it wasn't part of the process, but I also didn't want to leave Dawn in that particular space. Like, oh, grief has come up. Awesome. I'm going to take my experience with grief and understanding how grief fits into transformation and how it comes often. Great. And we're now going to do a little tapping on that particular thing. You know, so it's almost like I have I have my grandma's index cards of all of the different recipes that are close by when I'm preparing stuff. And as things come up, ooh, I'm going to grab this recipe and we're now going to do this thing next. For me, what happens is I have something that is implicit. Because of my experience, because of my training, I implicitly do things with clients. Then, when I do something consistently, even if I'm not teaching a class like this, I take the idea and I make it explicit. Because by making it explicit, I'm able to refine the process and do it better because I'm not just depending on my instinct, but I'm naming it. Then after it is explicit, then it becomes implicit again in a more structured, useful way. So it's almost like I name the process, I follow the recipe. Once I master the recipe, then I'm able to freestyle based off of the recipe because I've had a lot of experience with it. No, it's one of the reasons why I love teaching this class so much is it's forcing me to consistently every single month take the stuff that I do all the time and sit down and wrestle with, okay, great. Why am I actually doing it? Like, I hope you are benefiting from this class. My clients are really benefiting from this class because I am a sharper, better practitioner because this is the way I'm thinking when I'm doing this sort of work. And so you then get to take my ideas and my explicit process and take it apart and put it back together in the way that makes the most sense for you and compare it to your own experience. And you might bring some of your implicit thoughts out and they become explicit. So you become better, even if you don't use my stuff, by thinking in this particular way. Or that's my hope as we navigate our way through this stuff. Perfect. Awesome. Excellent. Everybody is out of their break rooms. Great. Questions, comments, concerns, thoughts? What did you notice? What did you learn? What was confusing? Yeah, Cheryl, go right ahead.
Okay, Jean, that was wonderful. Had a great experience. And I printed out the protocol really quickly, so that was helpful. I messed with it a little bit, only in the sense of one of the things that I added, and I didn't know if I was, you know, projecting myself onto the situation, but it turned out that Michelle had a resonance with it, was I added in safety, that it's safe to do all this.
Yep.
And so
absolutely, you know, I mean, it you know, the interesting thing is like the conversation that we had on Tuesday was the difference between being easy with myself and being gentle with myself and how sometimes one resonates with us and another doesn't, and permission, safety, all of those sorts of things, you know, and declaring safety is a really important thing for us to do because, you know, when in doubt, the issue is probably fear. Like at the base, you know, for me, like the kind of like in the hierarchy of emotions, the top of the positive emotion is love and the top of the struggling emotion is fear. And those are the ones that are opposites of each other. And so creating the sense of safety, because we are, you know, we have We have this genetic heritage. As Brad Yates says, it is not survival of the fittest, it's survival of the scaredest. You know, and 7,000 years ago, our ancestor that responded to fear faster was the one that got the head start and was the one that procreated. And so we've spent thousands of years honing and refining our ability to be afraid. And fear always wins. When I'm standing in the middle of the street and a car is barreling down on me, I'm not looking at the license plate. I'm not commenting on the make and model. I'm getting out of the way because of my fear of death. And so by constantly re-reminding the system, it's safe to have this conversation. It's safe to entertain the possibility of transformation. It's safe for me to transform. And so, like, recognizing the fact as we give permission and as we create safety, that it might just be the tiniest little baby steps of what we're saying it is safe to do. It's safe for me to think about this. It's safe for me to tap on this. It's safe for me to admit that I feel this way. It's safe for me to try and transform this thing, and just moving at the pace that is the right pace for what we're doing. And safety is a great way of doing it. Permission, again, is another great way of doing it. So that's awesome to introduce that particular idea into the work that we're doing.
Thank you. Cause well, awesome. I just am a big scaredy cat, so it works for me. Thank you.
You bet. Awesome. Other questions or thoughts or insights from that particular process, or questions about anything in general?
Jean, Kate, this is the first time that I felt comfortable doing it and knowing that I was doing a good job, because it was so easy.
Good.
It's so straightforward and something very easy to apply to any situation.
Yeah.
It's one of those things I'm going to sort of have on the back burner.
Good. So I'm glad that was my hope. And like I said, with that part four, where we're just the permission statements, like, that can be a standalone tapping on its own without anything else to it, and literally just follow the recipe and step your way through it. So I'm glad that having the guide rails for that makes it easy for you to do it in that way.
Yeah. I'm not being a practitioner, I often feel a bit lost. So I didn't feel at all lost.
Good. I'm glad. Excellent. Thanks, Kate.
Right. Yeah.
Awesome. Other thoughts, questions, concerns about that or other stuff? Yes.
Yeah. So actually, it's not a question, Jim. On the weekend when we had the spring event, I remember your lecture. And this morning when I was doing my tapping, right? So I had this random situation that I remembered from 20 years ago when I lived in New York, and was when I actually felt I had fear about something. And so I start tapping, I keep tapping. And I got to a point when I said, well, I forgive myself because I didn't know better back then.
Yeah.
And I held that belief, which doesn't serve me any longer. And then I give myself permission to be just who I am today. And that felt so good.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because you go back and you say, oh, but I could have done better in that moment, but I didn't have the information. And that's okay.
Yeah. And that's one of those things that intellectually it's easier for us to understand that, but for you to be able to grasp that in the moment while tapping by yourself and being able to integrate that, that's such a good thing. Like, the fact that you're like grabbing onto that little thing going, oh yes, this is actually something that is true. And that's one of the reasons why tapping is such a powerful thing, is because we know by tapping on these points, we're downregulating the emotion in the body. So the subconscious mind can hear these things intellectually that we know that are true. So as we're doing the memory consolidation or transforming what's going on, it's not just, oh, I should have known better, or oh, I couldn't have known better because I didn't know that thing, and I forgive myself for doing that. Doing this at the exact same time makes it get into the subconscious in an easier way, because we're down regulating the emotions while we're tapping. So that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. Awesome. Other questions or thoughts or concerns? Bad puns, knock knock jokes.
I'll share something. So
yeah, Lisa.
Tuesday when we were on the call, I mentioned to you that I'd had this memory come to me about a bad work situation when I first graduated from college, like some years ago. And in this context, and you suggested doing the inner child work around it. And I did that. And it was really, fun because me and my 24-year-old went and got revenge on this person. And it felt really good.
Absolutely.
To go get the revenge that she wanted to get for the past 30 years. So
yeah. Yeah. Revenge fantasies are useful as long as we're not living in them and as long as we're not acting them out. Like what we're doing is we're giving voice to that part of us that wants to stand up and be powerful and take that back, that space. And so doing it inside of the safety of child work in that particular way, that's an awesome application of it. So good. I'm glad.
Yeah. It was good. It was fun.
Good. Awesome. Cool. Other thoughts, questions, concerns, things I can be helpful with today? Cheryl, I see you've unmuted.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you, Lisa. That was really useful. It has never occurred to me to do that in terms of like a revenge. I mean, I can watch myself kind of go, oh, revenge, that's a heavy word. And then, but thinking about it in terms of standing up, you know, standing up for myself and speaking up and doing that in terms of some inner child work or some past work or whatever. Anyway, thanks, Lisa. That was great. That opened up a new avenue for me. I think that will be very useful. Yeah. Great. Thank you, Jean.
You bet.
It felt really powerful to kind of stand up to her and not let her, which she stole my self-confidence by constantly criticizing me. And I carried that forward in all of my jobs. And just had this realization about 10 days ago, and I've been tapping on it just kind of in the now, but going back and doing that inner child work and letting the 24-year-old me kind of put her in her place. It was good.
and I want everybody to hear that also, like, we call it inner child work, but it's basically just younger version work. And most of the time we're going to land at a time that is in our teens, in our single digits. But there are times where we have this really formative thing going on and going back and spending time with someone who is younger than us. And they could be 6 days younger than us. They could be in our 20s. Like, it is just a valuable of a tool. We call it inner child because that's the place that we normally land, but it works for anywhere in the past.
And I probably would, for me, I would just say, oh, wow, that's so great. It's just that, you know, standing up for yourself and like almost soul retrieval work, claiming your power back. And I guess I just don't think of that as revenge. I think of that as, no, that's just a powerful standing up for yourself. And maybe that was what, anyway, that was really cool. Yeah, thanks.
Awesome. Other questions, comments, thoughts, concerns? Things I can be helpful with. Yeah, Judith.
So I have a question with this revenge and standing up for myself. So in my in the last 6 months, because of life circumstances, I was really revengeful. And in my mind, I wasn't just standing up for myself, but I got pleasure out of thinking how I could be mean to people. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be honest. And I didn't act on it. You'll be relieved to hear. But what did you say beforehand? Revenge fantasies are useful as long as you don't act out on them. Clear. Right. And as long as you don't live with them, or you said something like that.
Yeah.
Inside them.
Yeah. And so what it is like, if we are doing something like that to give the emotion that we're experiencing voice, that is a good, useful thing. Fully articulated emotions are short-lived, mm-hmm. you know, and so it gives us an opportunity to get it out because we're getting a chance to process our way through it. But if we get into the middle of it and we just stay in the place where we are imagining ourselves slashing their tires or putting castor oil in their milk or whatever the thing is, and we stop at that point and we're not evolving and processing through, then it becomes something that is detrimental because the end is the experience of revenge. If we experience them and pass through them, almost like a child temper tantruming its way out, the end is processing that emotion in a healthy way where I'm giving it a chance to give voice, and at the other side of it going, okay, yeah, I'm never actually going to do that. So if the end is not enjoying it, the end is getting through it and processing that particular thing. And so as long as that is our intention and we're doing that particular work, then it is something that is healthy as we're doing it as an internal work. You know, it's almost like the exact same way when I'm really frustrated with someone, I'm beating my pillow. Like, that is a physical ability to process the anger by getting it out and having it be heard. But if I'm doing that sort of stuff, but staying stuck in that, then that becomes problematic.
But it might take several sessions.
That's absolutely. Okay. And sessions could be like, it could be weeks and or months, depending on, you know, like if we're in a circumstance where we are processing through decades of mistreatment and there's a part of us that is trying to get justice, because on some level, that's what revenge feels like. Like, there's two parts of revenge. One part of revenge is just hurting the person that hurt you. The other part of revenge is I'm getting justice. This has happened to me, therefore I'm getting that back. And that's a very, you know, primitive Old Testament eye for an eye approach to something, but subconsciously is a very primitive part of us. And so processing that is useful. And like any emotion, you know, like I'm open to 1 minute and one session miracles with any sort of transformation. And I also recognize it takes time, but doing multiple sessions of revenge fantasies is better than just this bubbling resent that is in the middle of my heart every moment of the day, every time I think about them. Like those are different things. And so it's not fun to be stuck in it, but that's always a shorter process than not.
Thank you.
And I guess just for me, maybe it's just the word revenge. Somehow that implies like harm in some mm-hmm. ways. And yeah. that one doesn't have as much of a resonance for me yeah. as the idea of just, oh no, I'm standing up. Yep. I don't feel a need to do harm. It's just a huge liberation yep. to be able to stand up and to speak when maybe in the past I hadn't. And the way I framed it subsequently is, I prefer and want to move toward more and more discernment so that I'm not putting myself in those kinds of situations.
Yeah, again. Absolutely. Yeah. And so for revenge feels too extreme, give yourself yeah. permission to replay the moment where you're standing in power. And yeah, what does it look like when you're standing in power? And the reality is, as we go through, if we go through the exact same moment where I'm standing into my power, more than likely what happens is with each successive time through it, we are less bitter and we are more powerful. Like the first time through, I am just responding to the hurt from a place of bitterness, and I'm just pushing back and I'm fighting back. But with each successive time through it, what's happening is the bitterness is burning out yeah. because I'm processing it. But the energy, instead of coming from bitterness, now the energy is coming from my internal strength and my internal power. And so it's almost as if I need 10 units of energy to stand up for myself. And initially, I have 9.5 units of bitterness and 0.5 unit of power. And each time through it, it's almost like it slowly starts to shift and the bitterness diminishes and it creates the space for me to stand into my own power. Till at the end of it, when it's happened on a healthy way and we've processed our way through it, we're able to go, yeah, that sucks. They took advantage of me. They hurt me. And I now am able to stand in my power inside of that particular thing.
Appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
Lisa, I saw you've unmuted yourself. Lisa, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
And just to address what Cheryl just said, that like in this process, because I asked my 24-year-old, you know, what do you need? What can I, you know, give you? That's part of that process. And she's like, I want to get back at her. I'm like, let's do it. So it's like, I don't have that energy of wanting to hurt her now, but I did then for sure. And I was still carrying that, even though it's not, you know, conscious in my thought and it's not who I am now. I've definitely grown out of that phase, but letting her, like, I think it's important if you have those emotions to actually feel them and not go, oh, I would never want to hurt somebody, because it, you know, it lasts for a minute when you're doing it through a process like this. Whereas if it's actually stuck in your system, but it's so buried that you don't even allow yourself to feel it, then you're just going to keep carrying that. You hurt me. I want to hurt you back.
That's really helpful. That's cool. I hear that. I get it.
I one time was doing something very similar to this with a client, and we were doing it with an inner child piece, and the child was using a voodoo doll and was using a voodoo doll as a way of getting out the revenge, and just got bored. Like at a certain point, just kind of like literally again, just burnt it out, just burnt the bitterness and hatred out, and just went, okay, yeah, this is no longer useful for me anymore. Great. Let's step into something new. All of the emotions are just information. The desire to get revenge has two aspects to it. I have been hurt and I need to stand up for myself. And so as we process that in a healthy way, we get that information. The system goes, okay, I've been heard. Now I can move into something that is a more useful emotion for me. Because, and you'll notice, a more useful emotion. Because again, that sense of processing this is useful for me to process it. It's not useful for me to stay in it, but it's useful because it's information. And then I do the next thing that is useful. And the next thing that is useful might be another revenge fantasy, or the next thing that is useful is a little more power as I stand up for myself in the circumstance. Or I might not have the power to stand up for myself, but I see myself as a vibrational leader where I'm having the courage to stand up for a coworker who's being abused in that particular way. And so inside of that, we're slowly moving up that emotional energetic scale with each time through it to be in the most valuable space. And like the idea of it taking multiple sessions is, you know, it's like anything. Like just because running a mile is good, running 100 miles today isn't 100 times better. Like there's a physical limit to the amount of emotion that we can process at any given time. Right. You know, I did a session one time that lasted one round of tapping, and then the client climbed into bed. Like, I mean, he was, when he was 9 years old, his father dropped him off at an adult jail and they just took care of him at a jail. You can imagine what would happen to a 9 year old in that particular circumstance. I met him when he was 33. We did a round of tapping. He literally drank a gallon of water and then went and climbed into bed. Because that was the capacity he had to process, because we moved so much in that short period of time and we weren't done, but that was his physical limit to do transformation. And so I think that's important for us to also keep in mind the expectations we have for ourselves and we have for transformation as we're navigating this. You know, I have four stories. I apologize to tell the same stories over and over again. I had a client who was tapping with me to get her husband off her back. Like literally her husband said, go tap with Jean, tap with Jean, tap with Jean. 15 minutes later, she was disappointed that a childhood trauma did not disappear in one round of tapping. So in 15 minutes, she went from resistant to expecting 1 minute miracles for these things that are really, really big. And it's important for us to recognize I am open to the possibility of that always happening. And 6 sessions of tapping, it's longer than one round and it's faster than 5 years of talk therapy, you know? And so it's always important that we're keeping this in context and going, I want to be better. And what is a reasonable bout of better in this particular moment? And so it's, I give myself permission to do the amount of transformation today that is healthy and safe for me to do today. And just use that. If we're doing something that is really deep and profound, we're giving ourselves permission to know I'm going to go as far as I'm going to go today. And that's going to be perfect. Because I'm going to come back to this again and I'm going to circle back to it again. And just like, again, I'm being gentle with myself in the process and only going as far as I can go. I'm being gentle with myself because I feel bad that I have these revenge fantasies. I feel bad because that is not me. And I'm being gentle. I'm gentle with myself knowing that I don't want to live in revenge. And this is a part of me that is speaking up for me that didn't have a chance to do that in the past. You know, again, context. That's what this idea of context is. We're being comfortable with what we are experiencing and loving and accepting ourselves when we do that. Because, of course, it's hard to love and accept myself when I'm living in a place of revenge. Of course, it's difficult for me to be comfortable inside of my own skin unless I know I'm creating a container that's saying it's safe for me to experience that right now because there's benefit in doing that. And naming the context transforms my relationship to what I'm experiencing in that particular moment. Awesome. I love these excellent kind of and this is the reason why I provide the question and answer session from both sessions, even if you don't make them, because we find questions and avenues to go down that's not in the content that gives you the opportunity to dive in. So even if you aren't going back and re-listening to what we're doing, I would encourage you to go back and re-listen to the session you weren't a part of from the weeks, just so you can get a little of this extra stuff as well. Or you can come back to both of them like some folks do as well. Awesome. Any other questions or thoughts on all that good stuff? Sweet. Well, that was a robust, fun 2 hours of stuff. Thanks for hanging out with me on a Saturday. Next month we will be back on schedule again the second week. Let's see here. What is the plan for next week? Or next month? It looks like, come on. Topics, if you are interested. Next month is May. We're going to do productivity next month. And how we can take action in a more effective way and using that as a way of clearing out some of that stuff that's rattling around in the back of the head. Awesome. Sweet. As always, you know how to find me, gene@tappingqa.com. Send me emails. Let me know how I can be helpful. 10 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow morning, you'll get an email from me with downloads from today and yesterday, extra links for the handouts. If you struggle with any of the downloads, please let me know. Shoot me an email because sometimes I mistype things. Sometimes they don't work. And I want to make sure you're getting all the good stuff. And you have access, if you decide to stop doing these classes, you will have access to all of the classes you attended always. So if you decide to move on and you don't have access to links, feel free to reach out to me in the future for past stuff as well. I'll have all that stuff available to you. So awesome. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, you all, wherever you are in the world. And I'll talk to you guys real soon. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.